Welcome to the Devin Nunes Podcast, breaking through the political noise, separating fact from fiction. From the San Joaquin Valley, the breadbasket of the solar system, here is your host, Devin Nunes.
Welcome back to the Devin Nunes Podcast. Great to have back on Jerry Hendricks, extraordinaire of everything Navy. Jerry, I want to talk this week and bring the listeners up to speed. There's a lot of talk about, and we've talked before, about the commercial ships and how big there is, and you call it the thin gray line. The Obama administration dropped down the number of ships that we had. The Navy was getting very, very small. So let's talk about the future of the U.S. Navy. Why don't we start with how many ships do you think we need? And then let's talk about what kind of ships that we need.
So there's been a lot of conversation about 350, 355 ships. The president called for 350 ships during his presidential campaign. The Navy actually in December of 2016 came out and said it needed a minimum of 355 ships. A few years ago, then Chief of Naval Operations in testimony in front of the House Armed Services Committee said the actual number is probably around 430 ships. So that's your steady state, 355 being the bare minimum. So where do you get that number? Where does a number like that come from? The regional combatant commanders, and by that I mean like the Supreme Allied Commander in Europe or the Pacific Command Commander or Southcom Commander, they put out what their requirements are for naval presence. They tell the Chief of Naval Operations how many ships they would like to have. And that's based upon regions of where we have high national interests. So there being 18 maritime regions of the world where we've identified national interests that require that a U.S. Navy ship be there to uphold those interests, things like free trade, free navigation. So things like that, it's like the Black Sea, we have national interests there. The Baltic, certainly with the Poles being our allies, we have national interests there. The North Atlantic, the South Atlantic, the Gulf of Guinea off from Africa, the Gulf of Oman. So there's 18 maritime regions. And when you start counting up how many ships it takes to keep a ship or a group of ships forward deployed in those regions, that's how you derive 355. Why? Well, if you have to have about 108 ships forward deployed in any given moment, which is what these all add up to, generally you have to have a ship in maintenance, and then you have to have a ship in training. So about 3 to make 1 is the ratio that we look at. And in some places like the Arabian Gulf, because it takes us so long to get there, it could be 5 ships to keep 1 forward deployed in the Gulf at any given moment. So that's where you get 355. But what's even more important inside of that is how not many of what type of ships that really drives this.
Because the aircraft carriers are super expensive, right?
That's right.
I mean, they're billions of dollars. They cost a lot to upkeep, 4,000 sailors. And we've talked before about how the Navy was into battleships and then switched to aircraft carriers during World War II. And sometimes, and I think there's been a lot of writing about this, but for sure this is what I believe. I begin to question, do we really need this many huge aircraft carriers that cost so much money versus, you know, should we have smaller types of transport, not the transport carriers, but what's the carrier called?
The light carrier.
The light carriers. Yeah,
the escort carrier or the amphibious carrier is what we do today. So we have 11 amphib carriers, which every other Navy in the world would call an aircraft carrier. Mm-hmm. But we call them amphib carriers because we have super carriers. Mm-hmm. And we want to have 11 super carriers because of all the requirements. Now, there is a question, you know, aircraft carriers were invented in 1914. Mm-hmm. So they are over 100 years old today as a conceptual combat system.
Right.
You have a real question.
Well, the problem nowadays too with the super carriers, you call them, mm-hmm. Is that, you know, one large projectile that the Chinese and the Russians are quickly developing can take out the entire super carrier with one strike.
Yes.
Right. And back in World War II, that couldn't happen. There were, you know, nobody could project that much force. So where should we head from here in terms of the carrier force?
So there's 3 initiatives that you have to take looking today. One is if you want to keep the carriers you have relevant, then you have to upgrade their air wing so that they can stand off at a longer distance and still be able to hit the enemy's target, still be able to project power ashore. We don't spend $15 billion on an aircraft carrier for it to do sea control. Carriers exist to project power ashore and break things. So right now, our air wing cannot reach shores in some of these places where anti-access air denial technologies like the DF-21 or the DF-26 have been deployed by those who would make themselves our enemy.
DF-21, DF-26?
Our anti-ship ballistic missiles that have been built by the Chinese. So those are meant to reach out 900 miles or greater and hit aircraft carriers, designed purposefully to keep
our capabilities off their shore.
That's right. So if you build the air wing so that it actually has an airplane that can fly a longer distance, then you can keep the carrier outside the range of that missile and still be able to hit the enemy. So that's the first thing. If you want to keep carriers, you got to upgrade the air wing. Mm-hmm. Second thing is you still have to have a balance in what I call the preserve the peace force. You got to win the war force, but you also have to preserve the peace. That requires presence. And you're right. I can't buy 355 aircraft carriers. So how do I most efficiently get my presence numbers up? Well, that's frigates. Right now, mm-hmm. the United States Navy has zero frigates in the Navy. We had 104 at the end of the Cold War, and today we went down to zero because we didn't really think that frigates had a reason to be in sort of the post-Cold War world, the unipolar moment that we had.
So most people know what a supercarrier is. They know what a smaller aircraft carrier probably looks like. But describe what a frigate looks like to the average person out there.
400 feet long, probably carries about 30 to 40 missiles. It has a gun, you know, probably a 3 or 5-inch gun forward. It has radar systems. It has ability to protect itself from an air defense. But most importantly, it has an ability to cross both the Atlantic and the Pacific on its own while escorting commercial ships. So this is a ship that's built in wartime to be convoy escort, but in peacetime, you use it to show the flag in a place.
But we have none right now.
We don't. We don't.
I know we have some in storage, right? We have some that are mothballed.
We have 8 up in the Philadelphia Navy Yard that we could bring back out. But right now we're in the process of trying to sell those off for some reason.
So what's the plan? What's the Navy's plan now for this?
So we have a program that's under consideration now, the FFGX, so the Fast Frigate Guided Missile Experimental, that we're hoping to take into production starting, I believe, actually in fiscal year 21 to begin building frigates again. And we're going to build 20. We actually need about 70 in order to get these frigate numbers up.
Oh, so will these be newer, more efficient, more capable than what we had before? Can still – because I know some of the newer ships they've been designing, these super special intelligence gathering ships and things – you know, what we found is when the war comes, they're not going to be of much use. So.
They will be more capable in the sense that the weapons that they carry and the sensors that they have are more capable, but they're still performing essentially the same type of mission, which is anti-surface protection against other surface ships, protection against submarines, and the ability to do limited air defense for, you know, the ships that they're right around. But hopefully the main key thing is to keep the price down to less than $1 billion. That's amazing to say. I need to buy a ship that's less than $1 billion. Almost everything else we have is well over $1 billion in order to buy enough of them to get my numbers up.
Right.
So this is how you keep the high end by still buying my $2 billion destroyer. But if I buy an $850 million frigate, suddenly I can – that's a 2-for-1 sale. You know, so that's one of those key investments. And then the other major thing we have to invest in is our submarines, fast attack submarines, which we, again, had over 100 in the Cold War, and today we have less than 50.
So I want to get to the submarines before we let you go. So we've got the supercarriers, projection of power, those capabilities. In Jerry Hendrick's perfect world, we get up to roughly 70 to 80 frigates over the course of the next decade or so, decade and a half. That can operate more efficiently than we have today, cover more ground, be more capable, assuming that the challenges stay the same. So with the submarines, still one of the most capable naval capabilities that we have still, but the Chinese are quickly catching up. So let's talk about us versus the United States versus China and what you think we need to do to keep us ahead of the Chinese.
Well, we need to continue to invest in the underwater environment, the submarine environment. It's an area where we still believe that we have a technical advantage over the Chinese and even over the Russians, although the Russians are better at building submarines than the Chinese are. But we need to build more. We have Virginia-class submarines that we're building right now, and we're about to do a modification of them where we put what we call these Virginia payload modules, which allows us to carry more cruise missiles or strike missiles in the submarine so that we can launch attacks from undersea against enemy positions. So if you maneuver a submarine silently and stealthily inside the enemy's weapons range, and suddenly missiles are coming up from under the water, that's a bad day from the enemy because mm-hmm. our submarines are very hard to detect. But we need to have them in sufficient numbers that on day one, the day that somebody else decides that they want to jump ugly with us in combat operations, that I have a sufficient number of submarines in that first couple of days of battle to begin to attrit their surface-to-air missile sites and their surface-to-surface missile sites so that I can bring the rest of my naval force, my surface ships and my aircraft carriers in as close as I can. But submarines are critical.
So we have how many today?
Less than 50 today.
And what do you think we need?
Again, today in a 355-ship Navy, 70 of those should be submarines.
And how many are we producing now?
We're producing 2 per year. We're trying to ramp up to 3, and we don't have the defense industrial base any longer to be able to produce in the higher numbers. We need to invest in the defense industrial base to be able to really ramp up over the long haul.
So in a perfect world, you'd be very happy if we had 70 frigates, 70 modernized submarines with the super carriers, and then, of course, the smaller vessels.
And the air wing. I don't ask for much.
Well, look, Jerry, this is very, very helpful. Jerry Hendricks, a retired Navy captain, we really appreciate you coming on the show again.
My pleasure.
This is Devin Nunes. We'll catch you next Friday.
Thanks for listening to the Devin Nunes Podcast. We invite you to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And remember, you can download this podcast on iTunes or at devinnunes.com.
Storm clouds been gathering so long, I don't know.
The darkness around us leaves no easy road.
We started wondering if every road dead ends our dreams.
Wind whips the dust up and rain's pouring down.
Good people struggling in every hometown.
We started wondering if we even matter at all.
We'll take that hard road to happier days.
'Cause we've kept our American faith.
Now it's not our first trial by fire like this.
It's nothing hard work and family can't fix.
We've got the power to save it all here in our hands.
We'll take that hard road to happier days.
'Cause we kept our American faith.
We, the people, free and strong,
fight through the dark night toward the dawn.
Freedom marches on.
Afraid.
That's why they call her the home of the brave.
With a prayer and a purpose, we're already half the way there.
We'll take that hard road to happier days.
'Cause we've kept our American faith.
Paid for by Devin Nunes Campaign Committee.